failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies. Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. Today we begin a series of reports produced at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference in Long Beach, California. Ethan Nadelman, the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, gave about a 45-minute speech to help open the festivities, and for this program we basically cut that in half. Please forgive a little fuzz and noise.
We are a movement, after all, for reason, compassion, and justice. We are a movement for human rights, a movement for common sense and decency, people who believe in science-based research and evidence-based practices. That is who we are. When they say those people are the people, they like drugs. And you know what? It's true. I mean, the truth of it is that a lot of us are here because we like drugs. We especially like marijuana. That's the truth of it. We like marijuana. You know? I mean, hundreds of us, right? We are people who marijuana they've been good to us. Right? Marijuana not been a problem for us. Marijuana has been something positive in our lives. Marijuana has been something that's helped open us up. Marijuana has been something that takes our minds places and imaginations places we didn't imagine. Marijuana is something we like. A little food, a little movie, a walk in the park, a little making love. I mean, marijuana has been good. You know, God put this thing here for a reason. I do believe, you know, and we believe, you know. That why is the government saying to us that because we choose to put this herb into our bodies, we have to be defined as a criminal? Why is that? Why would half of all Americans between the ages of 18 and 58, I believe it is now, have actually sampled this thing at least once, and millions if not tens of millions enjoy it? Why should we be defined as criminals absent any harm to others? And quite frankly, it's not just about marijuana. You know, I mean, some of us have a friendly relationship with more powerful substances. The hallucinogens, for example. You know, millions and millions of people. Timothy Leary may have done that research, and Timothy and Richard Alpert may have found some things out, but there have been things. There have been good things about these substances. And quite frankly, I don't want to damn any of the other drugs as well, because ultimately this is not about the drugs. Because there are people who have learned to have relationships with every drug under the sun. They've learned to have healthy relationships and productive relationships, relationships that help them live in their lives. Also because we know, in fact, that what are we but drugs? What are these endorphins and these cannabinoids and all these other substances and adrenalines that exist in our system, right? We know that we are not all born equal. We do not all pop out of our mother's wombs as perfectly balanced chemical creatures who can perfectly go throughout society and life without ever consuming any psychoactive substance. We know that these plants and these chemicals, these things that have been discovered and designed and devised all around the world throughout history, are something that we need to find a way to live with in peace. So yes, it is about our affection and our friendship and even our love relationship with these substances and about our demand that we not be persecuted and incarcerated for that. But is that all we are? Because you know who else this movement is? You know who else this growing movement is? We are also people who hate drugs. We are people who have seen all of the worst things that drugs can do. People who have watched our children die of overdoses and of addiction. We are people living with HIV and hepatitis. We are people who cannot handle these drugs. We are people who have loved drugs and can no longer love these things. We are people who come from families where one after another has been addicted to this substance or another. We are people who wish we could be like the people who love those drugs, but who know we cannot be. We are those people who have suffered the consequences of addiction. And no matter how much we hate these drugs, and no matter how much we could wish we could build a wall between these drugs and our children, between these drugs and ourselves, no matter how much we wish these drugs would simply disappear from the face of the earth, we know that these drugs are here to stay. We know that people will continue to use them and misuse them because that is who we are as human beings. And we know that dealing with these drugs and the people who use them, primarily through the criminal justice system and a drug prohibition system, is not the way to deal with this. And who else are we? We're the people who love drugs. We're the people who hate drugs. And we're the people who don't give a damn about drugs at all. But quite frankly, this movement is growing and being empowered by people who really don't care that much about drugs at all. What they care about is something else. What they care about may be the United States Constitution and our First and Fourth and Fifth Amendments. What they care about may be the fact of living in a country where tonight 2.2 million people will sleep behind a prison or jail bars. What they care about is the racial injustice of the war on drugs. What they care about is the devastation of the environment when American-sponsored agents fly around foreign countries spraying herbicides. And what they care about is our fundamental rights and freedoms. What they care about is sensible, pragmatic use of government resources. What they care about is having elected officials who don't throw our money down a drain, down a cesspool of the war on drugs. People who don't care about drugs at all, but know the war on drugs is not the right way to go. So who are we? The people who hate drugs, the people who love drugs, and everybody else. Let's understand that and be clear about that. Now, the challenge, of course, is what is our role? Right? We are building a movement. We are building a movement for reform. We are building a movement to end the war on drugs, with which our society and so many others have lived for 50, 70, and 100 years. We know that this is a long-term struggle. Some of us have already struggled for 10 and 15 years, and we are committed to struggling until we no longer breathe another breath. We know that this is a long-term struggle. But at the same time, building a movement, it's about teaching. How many people understand the extent to which the Americans' incarceration policy is unparalleled in the history of democracies? How many people understand that we lead the world per capita in the incarceration rate? How many people understand that we have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prison population? How many people get that? How many people understand that the spread of HIV, AIDS, and hepatitis is not about drugs, and it's not about needles, it's about ineffective and stupid-ass public health policies or absence of health policies that causes disease to spread? So our job is to teach. Our job is to teach about the consequences of the drug war, to enable people to understand that this country locks up more people on drug charges tonight than all of Western Europe locks up for everything, and they have 100 million more people than we do. To understand that the hundreds of billions of dollars spent in just the last decade alone, the millions of people arrested, that these things are not essential, they are not necessary. You know, there's something about, we have all grown up in a society in which drugs have been demonized. We have all been inundated with the anti-drug messages. We have all lived with people who struggle with substance abuse, and we've learned through society to understand their problems with drugs in a certain way. You know, we carry within ourselves our own ignorances and our own prejudices that we need to find ways to keep challenging and uprooting. You know, we can't just keep arguing, hoping that we can uproot the drug war and end the incarceration and end the racial injustice of the drug war unless we dig deeper and understand what's going on beneath all of this. Our convictions are good, our convictions are solid, but we need to keep going within ourselves to understand this. You know, nobody has been persecuted and prosecuted the way that African Americans. Nobody. In my state, New York, 95% of people incarcerated on the Rockefeller drug law offenses are black or brown. 95%. In Alabama, a young black man being arrested two or three times with a marijuana joint can face 5, 10, or 15 years behind bars, whereas a young white man being arrested two or three times for drunk driving will still get a misdemeanor slap on the wrist. And I say black or white not because only blacks or only whites are arrested for one or the other, but because disproportionately it's young black men being arrested on the drug charges and disproportionately young white men being arrested on the drunk driving charges. Is that a subtle or not so subtle racism? No. Racism permeates this. And not just in our own society. You know, you look, how is it that the coca plant, Mama Coca, has become criminalized, that urine conventions can be written that propose eliminating this plant from the face of the earth only because of the people who have down their noses at the campesinos, the peasants, the indios of Latin America and said, your dirty habit we will not accept. Right? There has always been elements of discrimination. But the racism, the stuff that goes into targeting people for driving while black, for walking while black, much less for running while black. But you know, you can't take on the racism of the drug war unless you're willing to take on your own fears, your own issues about what these drugs are about. We don't want our children to use drugs. And yes, of course, people can destroy themselves with drugs. And yes, of course, we don't want people smoking crack cocaine and shooting drugs into their arms and all of this. But ultimately, we have to go to the next level. We have to understand the ways in which drugs themselves are transformed by those prohibitionist laws. We have to understand that these drugs are not these animate objects seizing and grabbing people. Remember, what drove this war in inner-city black communities was not just white people calling in the cops on black people, but very scared black people calling in the cops on black people. That's what also needs to change. We don't call in our oppressors to save ourselves from ourselves. Are we willing to accept, we can't be the people who say legalize pot so you can go after those other things better. Legalize my substance. Are we going to be like the people who fought for the rights of the first generation of immigrants just so they could close the door to the next group? No. You know, this movement gets defined as being about legalization. About legalization. Now, quite frankly, I haven't heard a credible argument against legalizing marijuana. So, I don't know how we have a drug policy reform movement if we reject the notion that marijuana should be treated more or less like alcohol and tobacco. I don't get that. I don't think I could be honest with myself or anybody else if I believe that somehow the continuing prohibition of cannabis could be morally or ethically or scientifically or any way justified. I don't see that. But when we talk about legalization as the answer for the whole thing, quite frankly, I don't know. Am I for legalization? I think so. Sometimes. Yeah, I'm not so sure. Do I think there is tremendous power when people stand up, especially the brave men and women of LEAP? And when they say, I have fought this battle for 5 and 10 and 20 and 30 years of my life, I have arrested hundreds if not thousands of people. I have risked my life to go after drug dealers. I have met drug dealers who I would be happy to call my brother, and I've met drug dealers who I would happy to lock them up and throw away the key. But what I know, no matter what I've done or who I've met, that this is the wrong way to deal with this, and that ultimately legalizing drugs could not be worse than what we're doing now. I think there is power in that and more power to you, and go forward and go and do that. Right? But what I also know is that how do we fully have a conviction that it is the right way? How do we bravely go out there and say, oh yes, we should treat crack cocaine like alcohol, we should treat heroin like alcohol? How do we go out there? Yes, some of us have the libertarian principles, the libertarian confidence to say with confidence that it would be preferable to what we are doing today. But so many of us do not. And what we also know is that when we advocate just for legalization, we know that people recoil. That's what you want to do? Is that all it's about? Just legalizing, legalizing, legalizing? Don't you care about the people who suffer? And you say, well, of course I do, but they don't. And they can't even listen because they've been so scared and intimidated by the fact that you have embraced the L word, the dangerous word. You know, this is the system we've all grown up with. It's a system we know. It's the devil we know. And when you talk about some radical alternative, we're proposing perhaps the devil we don't know. And maybe that devil is more fearsome just because it's the devil that is strange rather than the devil is familiar. Maybe that devil is more fearsome because, in fact, it would be worse. Maybe that devil turns out to be far less than the devil we know. But we can't prove that that is the case. Do we need this system to protect ourselves? What does history tell us? What do we learn from the America of the late 19th century when, in fact, perhaps a higher proportion of Americans used these drugs back then than used them now, but when the negative consequences of that drug use were so dramatically less than it is today? Do you really think this system is protecting your children? Do you believe that, you know, the drug czars and the governors and the presidents who say, well, we need this war on drugs, we need this prohibitionist system, we cannot medicalize marijuana legally, we cannot allow clean needle programs. Why? Because we need to protect the kids, right? We need to protect the kids. Got to protect the kids, protect the kids, protect the kids, right? The whole drug war justified as one great big child protection act. Especially when it comes to marijuana, protect the kids. Who today has the best access to marijuana in America? Teenage kids! Who had the best access 10 years ago? The kids. 20 years ago? Kids. 30 years ago? The kids. 10 years from now? 20 years from now? The kids. I know people my age who can't find marijuana. And then they come and they ask, where do I find some marijuana? What do people say to them? Ask your kids. I mean, so the kids are looking at us like, you gotta be kidding me, right? And then, of course, the humiliation. Who is it that we send into our schools and our classrooms to educate our children about drugs? Right? First we send in the DARE officers, the police officers, to teach about drugs, right? Who either have never used these drugs, or if they have, they cannot talk about them, right? Or we send in people who have misused these drugs, got in terrible trouble with these drugs, and can never use these drugs again. I mean, to stretch the analogy a bit, imagine you were sending your children to business school, and the only people allowed to teach in business school were people who had never run a business or people gone bankrupt. I mean, drugs did not become less available after we arrested millions of young black and brown men and locked them up. They remained just as available. But meanwhile, all the consequences of the prohibitionist system in terms of incarceration and arrest and racism, in terms of corruption, in terms of HIV and AIDS and overdose, what have you, all of those things were magnified 10 and 20 and 50-fold. It's questioning those assumptions. It's putting it out there as that question. We have to believe that if we do ourselves use drugs, we have to be the responsible drug user, not the irresponsible drug user. When it's with our children, we have to buy good models, not the bad ones. We got to open up. We understand it's not just ignorance. It is a very deep and fundamental fear. It is every parent's desire to take their baby and put it in a bubble, and their fear that these drugs and even these words like this are provide the needle, the syringe that will pierce that bubble and endanger their children. It's always trying to get past and through the prejudices and defenses. It's how we move through that. And outside the Netherlands, there's no place where cannabis is being sold so openly and so humanely as it is in California today. We need to be smart. We need to protect that. This battle is going to be waged. This is the single greatest effort in America to take the criminal justice system and stretch it in our direction, applying harm reduction principles, trying to reject the notion that people should be incarcerated simply for what they put in their body. Let's understand that there are judges sitting in the courts who are sympathetic and who agree with us. There are drug court judges who are doing the Lord's work and who embrace harm reduction principles in their own work, but too many who want to turn this into another externalized, expanded, coercive system. And that is what we cannot allow. We need to fight this battle and be smart and savvy. Let's be smart. Let's go back to the legislature, the ballot initiative process. And let's repeal three strikes in a way that the public will embrace, and where we are not vulnerable to attacks about being reckless on this. When it comes to HIV/AIDS, let's keep moving forward on demanding surge access policies, pointing out the illegitimacy of the federal government that will not spend a penny for a clean needle, even as every other advanced industrialized country in the world and many that are not so advanced are now doing that today. Let's understand that people on methadone, if you have a prejudice against methadone, rip it out. Understand that it is a medicine. Understand that the tens of thousands of people who lead absolutely normal, law-abiding lives, for whom this is their life-saving medicine, that they dare not speak out because of the stigma associated with it. And that therefore only those who continue to struggle with drugs and use methadone are depicted in the media. Don't blame methadone any more than you blame somebody who switches from cigarettes to a nicotine patch. Don't blame methadone any more than you blame somebody diabetic who uses their insulin every day. Fight for people's rights. Don't say they're just substituting one addiction for another. The way we broaden our movement is by seizing the issues that are close and one step removed. Millions, tens of millions of Americans today suffer because their doctor will not prescribe appropriate pain medication, because their nurse is afraid to recommend it, because even they themselves live with their own irrational fear of opiates, their own opiophobia that causes them not to take this substance, to say, I'd rather die in pain than die an addict. We can build alliances. We will build alliances with the progressive movement and insist that our values and what we are fighting for is what the progressive movement is about in this country. And at the same time, we will walk into the halls of conservative power and we will say that our principles are about what they are fighting for too. That we are about individual freedom. That we are about responsible government policy. That we are about keeping the government out of our lives, out of our bodies, out of our bedrooms and what have you. Now, I'm finally going to say something about the international scene. You know, because right here we have people from all around the world, all around Europe, around Latin America, from Hungary and Kazakhstan and Tajikistan. You know, 100 people at this conference from all around the world. And they, too, live with the consequences of the U.S. war on drugs. They live with the oppressive policies that we have propagated around the world. They live with the consequences of the global drug prohibition regime that has caused so much pain and suffering and waste all around the world. But there is a growing global movement as well. When I was in Bogota a couple of weeks ago, and you see it, people are saying, this system doesn't work, it doesn't work for us, that Colombia is like Chicago under Al Capone times 50. Enough is enough is enough. But I'll tell you, folks from Europe, you are our leaders, you are our teachers. What you are doing around cannabis and heroin prescribing and safe injection rooms and harm reduction and international policy is a role model for us. And there is a growing movement there. And, you know, for a long time, the United States government could go into those international conventions and international meetings, and they could always count on the folks from Asia to back them up. You know, no drug war was too vicious. The Chinese felt like they had been reamed by the British Opium Wars, and they were going to do anything, you know, celebrate International UN Anti-Drug Day by lining up thousands of people in stadiums and shooting them for being involved with drugs. But you know something? People in Asia are freaking out now. People in Asia are freaking out. Because they see HIV/AIDS spreading. And they see, unlike Southern Africa, is where it primarily spread through sexual conduct, in India and China and Vietnam and Indonesia and Malaysia and Russia, but they know it's being spread first and foremost by people who inject illicit drugs and who may share needles and because of the absence of sensible public health policies. Earlier this year, the mullahs, the ayatollahs who run Iran, they issued a fatwa, a religious edict declaring that methadone and needle exchange were okay under Islamic law. I only wish we could get the mullahs in our own country to do the same thing. But, you know, people around the world think that somehow the U.S. drug war is all about ulterior motives, about humiliating and oppressing people. And every once in a while it is that. But what I keep saying to people outside this country is, you don't get it. You don't get it. You don't get it. It's not so much that the U.S. government wants to humiliate you and take advantage and do this and that. You know, ultimately, what you have to understand is the reason the U.S. is doing this, the U.S. international drug war doesn't serve U.S. global interests. What you need to understand is that by and large, what you are being subjected to is an international projection of a domestic psychosis. We've got enough. We're locking up more people in drug charges in America than I believe all of Latin America locks up for everything. Enough. Have a little compassion for us. Yes, we look at the struggles for gay rights and civil rights and women's rights as our predecessors. We seek to stand on their shoulders and to learn from them. Yes, we know that every one of these struggles was about individual freedom and about social justice. Yes, we know that every one of these struggles where the people with vested interests tried to defend what they had. In every one of these struggles, other countries moved ahead faster than we ourselves did. And in every one of these struggles, the movements themselves struggled with their own struggles, with their own battles over turf and ego and funding and what have you. You know, sometimes you hate nobody so much as your best ally. But you know, it's always once again where we dig deep within, where we rise above, where we keep our eye on the prize that we are all fighting for. Because that's what we're about. We are building a movement. We are building it. It's going to change this country. It's going to change this world. It has to be grounded and based in a fellowship of principle and ethics and of constantly challenging ourselves and moving beyond. So thank you very much for coming here to Long Beach. It's going to be an amazing conference.
Again, that was Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance. Their website, drugpolicy.org. The awards dinner was held on the evening of the last day of the four-day conference. The recipients of the Norman E. Zinberg Award were Mike and Valerie Corral, the directors of WAM, the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana out in Santa Cruz, California. And we have just enough time to hear a portion of Mike Corral's acceptance speech.
Security is the exact opposite of freedom. The only way to attain security is to compromise freedom. There's a place where people are assured a house, food, free time, and an exercise yard. It's called prison. They have maximum security there in prison, but they have no freedom. As the song goes, land of the free, home of the brave. Look at our civil liberties since 9/11, sacrificed on the altar of national security. Are we safer? No. Are we more secure? No. The government uses fear to convince us it's okay to give up. We have a choice. The government cannot force us to give up our freedom. We must be willing participants. If we can present a big enough unified front, we can succeed at anything. It's my view that the war on drugs is over. What we're fighting for now is the terms of surrender. I say we accept no compromise. Compromise will only bring us more security. In my mind, freedom is what matters. An analysis of all social legislation over the last 50 years has shown that not one piece was passed by working within the system. All were passed by using protest, demonstration, or other alternative means. March in the name of freedom, and we can deliver ourselves into the land of the free. When Thoreau was in jail, Emerson asked, "What are you doing in here?" His response was, "No, the question is, what are you doing out there?" I invite everyone to share in civil disobedience. Having been arrested 3 times, I can assure you it's scary. It is not the end of the world, though. It can be the beginning of freedom. Thank you very much.
I hope you were able to forgive the audio, and I promise never to allow anyone to control my controls again. Please listen to this week's Cultural Baggage Show. We'll have some better audio for you from this Drug Policy Alliance conference. During this conference, I was quite happy to hear the frequency with which people used the word legalize and the words end prohibition. Scientists, doctors, lawyers, ministers, people everywhere are standing for the truth. Next week, I'm headed to Seattle to attend the conference, the Exit Strategy from the War on Drugs. And once again, I remind you, there is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, medical data, moral reason, religious underpinning. In fact, no reason whatsoever for the drug war to continue for another second. We have been duped. The drug lords run both sides of this equation. Please do your part to help end this madness. Prohibido estoc evilesco. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.